Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. American Electric Power 14 years ago bought out the tiny Ohio river town of Cheshire, which had coexisted with the General James Gavin coal plant since 1971. The siting of the huge plant next to a tiny village first settled in the late 18th century was a no-brainer, according to Richard Ayers. He's the lead counsel in the Cheshire buyout.
The location was chosen for two really obvious reasons. One, it was sitting on the Ohio River, so there was cooling water for the plant. And two, there was a coal mine about 10 miles away. So if you're siting something like that, that's exactly the kind of place you'd look for. And the fact that there happened to be a village sitting there, you wouldn't want to let that get in your way.
For decades, the plant and the village coexisted, as I said, with little problem. Then in 2002, anti-pollution controls, ironically, caused the plant to emit a blue plume that stung the eyes and irritated the throats of residents. AEP offered a buyout to residents of the village, and now it stands mostly empty. Fields of grass where streets and homes once dotted the landscape like a quilt. The story of Cheshire caught the attention of photographer and filmmaker Eve Morgenstern of Brooklyn, New York, who has produced a new documentary. You just heard a cut from that on the topic. It's entitled Cheshire, Ohio, an American coal story in three acts. She joins us now. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
The $20 million buyout of Cheshire was novel, to say the least. We were immediately touched by the idea of it at the Columbus Dispatch, where I worked at the time. What caught your attention about the story?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was a huge story, and it was on the front page of the New York Times. So in New York, I got the paper, and I saw the front page, and I saw the photograph of this elderly woman, I think it was Helen Preston, in her late 80s, looking, you know, up at the stack, and it was an amazing visual, and the story was amazing that this big corporation, this coal energy corporation, was going to buy out an entire town, and that it was happening in real time. And I thought to myself, wow, to be able to potentially capture that, to capture a town dissolving and people leaving, a place that obviously many had lived in for their entire lives, would be, you know, a fascinating thing to cover. And so I went down. I booked a trip and I went down to scout it out. And as soon as I met a lot of these residents, I was hooked. I mean, there, so many of them were so open. They were incredible storytellers. There was a whole culture of, you know, elderly people, senior citizens who lived there, who had been there their whole lives. And just it was very sad. And it was also just unbelievable visuals to me, seeing this kind of enormous, scary plant with the smoke right next to a little village.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about Cheshire. That's the little Ohio River village town that was bought out by AEP in 2002. You just heard from Eve Morgenstern. She's the director and producer of a new documentary. It's entitled Cheshire, Ohio, an American coal story in three acts. If you have a question or comment, we're going to be hearing from a former Cheshire resident coming up later on in the program. And also Doral Chenoweth of the Columbus Dispatch will join us in just a sec. Questions or comments, 614-292-8513. There were different reactions to the buyouts, not black and white, but lots of shades of gray. And I'm wondering what you thought of Cheshire when you got there and what kind of impressions you had at the outset.
Okay, well, the first impression is just complete awe and shock at how close this massive plant is to this little centuries-old village. It's obvious the village was there first. There are old houses, and it's constructed around sidewalks and little churches. And then you have this massive plant that just seems, you know, illegally close to a town, you know, for me as an outsider coming down. So that was my big smack first impression. I think most people have that who are outsiders who kind of drive in.
Right. But it's interesting how the people who lived there kind of ignored it. They didn't even pay attention to it.
That's been a really interesting lesson to learn, to hear from the residents that it wasn't, well, it was considered a big deal, I think, more on the positive. When the plant came, I think people were potentially excited about it. They thought it could signal jobs. You know, I don't want to speak for people, but kind of the impression I got was that this is an area that's always been a heavy coal area. People have had jobs in the mines from way back or their own little mines. Very comfortable with coal, very comfortable with industry. So this plant comes and it's welcomed. It's, you know, it's an incredible structure.
Lots of jobs.
So, you know, mm-hmm. Boots Hearn in the film even says it was so exciting seeing the first stack go up. So it signaled something different when it came in that it would, for me, the outsider coming in going, oh my God, pollution, scary. It was jobs and sort of excitement potentially that this big company chose that spot.
Let's listen to somebody talk about what happened around 2001.
Blue sulfuric clouds that spewed from an American Electric power plant last summer endangered the plant's neighbors, particularly those suffering from asthma. Air tests showed that levels of sulfur dioxide in Cheshire, an Ohio River village next to the General James M. Gavin plant, were more than 80 times the national average for rural areas.
That's former Cheshire resident Jennifer Harrison reading from one of the first articles in the Columbus Dispatch to cover the issue back in 2001, well before the AEP buyout was proposed. You just heard that. It's a cut from a new documentary on the topic entitled Cheshire, Ohio, an American Coal Story in Three Acts. Jennifer will join us later in the program. When news of the AEP proposed buyout broke in 2002, the Dispatch embedded a team of reporters and photographers in Cheshire right away. In the spirit of full disclosure, I was the editor for that team. Photographer Doral Chenoweth worked elbow to elbow with the reporters. He is now a videographer and web producer at the Dispatch, and he joins us now. Welcome back.
Thank you very much.
The Dispatch rented a house, and reporters were there for days on end sometimes. What are your enduring impressions of that time? What was it like being down there? I kept saying I was going to go down, but I was too busy.
Oh, you should have come down.
I know.
It was a beautiful river town, and my impressions of it just... We're kind of like slipping into a Norman Rockwell painting.
Yeah.
It was like you met people like Odella and Harold Mack, a former mayor, and they had a nice little house right on Main Street. And you met all these great residents everywhere you turn around. And yet you had this huge news story on your hands all at the same time. I mean, they're out there picking blueberries, but yet, you know, these plumes are coming out of the stacks of the nearby factory. And it was a chance to both kind of slip into just photographing small town life.
Yeah.
And yet you also had, you know, council meetings to go to because they were going to discuss the buyout. And there was all this change in the air. And it was just a fascinating assignment. And the Dispatch was able to cut me loose for basically a summer or longer, if I remember correctly. And, you know, I lived in the little house down there and just drove around the town, took my bicycle down. And I think it kind of disarmed people, you know, to, you know, they expect a reporter to drive up in a big rental car, and, you know, here I come on my 10 speed.
Uh-huh.
And it was just a chance to blend in a way and photograph this town before it goes away. And I look back on the body of work that I did at that time, and it's nostalgic to look at the Cheshire Boxing Club, which was an old garage.
I remember this
guy ran this with his son. And, you know, it's just a chance, you know, it's a place for guys to go hang out and punch the punching bag for a while. But, you know, and to just meet all those great people.
You know, Eve Morgenstern mentioned a little earlier about the sadness, too. So that was one of those, that was kind of an overlay for me as an editor at the time that we had these stories we had to do and these places we had to go. And of course, those bits and pieces like the boxing club and those kinds of things to tell. But there's an overlay of sadness overall.
Yeah. You look at like the mayor at the time was Tom Reese, and he had a beautiful Victorian home in the center of town. And you know it's going to go because, you know, Tom Reese, like probably 95% of the residents, took the buyout offer from American Electric Power. And, it's, you know, when once they gained control of it, they demolished his house. And I happened to be there the morning.
Did they take anything out of it, though?
Well, I think
I hope they salvaged.
The Reeses were able to obviously take out whatever they wanted.
Yeah.
And then there was actually salvage companies, out-of-state salvage companies coming in, you know, antique buyers, and they would buy the mantles or the window frames. They would buy anything they could and load them up in their U-Haul trucks and carry them out of town. So, you know, somewhere, you know, Cheshire lives on. But, you know, to be there the day that the old Victorian house came down, it was sad, very sad.
How much were you able to capture while you were there working and documenting this, Eve?
Well, I learned about the story when the buyout was announced. So I wasn't there for the whole lead up to the buyout, all the pollution problems and, the years of protesting and, the whole history of that. And then, I think there was a lot of drama that went on that I wasn't there to capture leading up to the buyout because there was a split, even though most of the people took the buyout. I think it was very complex. A lot of elderly residents, even though they took the buyout, were, incredibly stressed about it and really devastated. And I think, again, when you talk to them later on about it, there is some regret and just stress about the whole situation. They felt that they kind of had to do it, which makes sense. I mean, I think a lot of people just felt helpless at that point. There were so many problems that were happening with the plant and nothing was getting really corrected and it was scary. So I got there right at the moment that the buyout was announced. So I was able to capture definitely those feelings when they were potent, right, when that was happening. And then I went several times over the years and captured, the bulldozing of the homes, family moving out. And then, of course, a holdout, Boots Hearn, who just, amazing, residents who were over a certain age, around 70, were allowed to accept the buyout, take the money, and stay until they passed away. But Boots, amazingly, just outright rejected the money. And she was just so angry about it and just didn't feel that it was enough. So she stayed and she's a great character. So I spent a lot of time with Boots, also with Gladys, another elderly resident
who stayed
and just great storytellers, amazing, strong women who were widows living there on their own. And it was, very eerie over time to capture all the homes getting bulldozed, town just disappearing, just plots of grass and then like a couple of homes dotted here and there of these very elderly, frail, but strong residents.
And just armed, living, by the way, if anyone's getting
and
any
And Boots
ideas.
Was armed. So it also brought out, some paranoia, too. I mean, you really felt the sadness and the tragedy of that revisiting the town years after the buyout. And then what happened was I put the film down for a while because I just somehow felt something was missing from making it into a feature film. It was sort of like fait accompli. Okay, the town was bought and it was really sad and all these people moved and that was very compelling. But then what? And I just put it down for a while. And then I heard about this new lawsuit that these workers feel that they are sick because they were working in the coal ash field right next to the plant. Mm-hmm. Not properly protected, and some of them have cancer and other illnesses. So that is happening, and that was very compelling. And also, it brings up issues of how do you draw the line about pollution and who is affected by the pollution. So it's the little village was bought out, but the people who live across the street or just one block away or 1 mile away are still in the shadow of the plant and they're still affected by continued pollution issues. And that's addressed in the film too.
And should note that we, of course, did invite AEP to send a representative along to join the conversation and they declined our offer. We will continue our conversation about Cheshire, Ohio, the little village that was along the Ohio River in the shadow of the Gavin coal-burning power plant on the Ohio River. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org or check out our Facebook page. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Eve Cochran moved to Cheshire with her husband for its peaceful atmosphere. She said they never paid any attention to the power plant next door. That is until 2001, when the blue plume from the smokestacks started to burn their eyes and throats.
So it's really an old house. It was, I think it was 1919, 1920, something like that. I think that down the road, it's going to be hard for me to accept that I can't tell my children the way my parents told me to show me the house that we lived in and we was born and raised in, because actually I don't think our house will be here to show them.
Since then, American Electric Power has bought out the town in 2002, displacing 221 residents, including the Cochrans, from their homes. Still with us is photographer and filmmaker Eve Morgenstern of Brooklyn, New York. Eve has produced a new documentary entitled Cheshire, Ohio, an American coal story in three acts. There is a screening this week at the Gateway Film Center in Columbus. If you want more information, check out the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Eve will be there for a Q&A moderated by Andy Chow of Ohio Public Media Statehouse News Bureau. Also with us, Columbus Dispatch videographer and web producer Doral Chenoweth, who is with a team of reporters embedded at Cheshire during the negotiations and the exodus. Joining us now by phone is former Cheshire resident Jennifer Harrison. You heard her a little earlier. Welcome to the show, Jennifer.
Thank you very much.
Jennifer, when you look back at that time, what do you think about the most?
The stress that we were under with the different issues with the power plant, but most of all, probably our loss of community as we all eventually moved away, I would say. And we always said we would keep in touch, but of course, we haven't exactly done that. Mm-hmm. So I would say those two things would stick in my mind the most.
Tell us about when you moved to Cheshire. Did you grow up there your whole life, or did you move there as an adult?
My husband and I got married in 1980, and he lived 10 minutes down the road, and I lived 10 minutes up the road. So we kind of moved to the middle ground, 10 minutes away from our families, and We moved there in June of 1980, and the power plant wasn't really an issue at that point. We hardly noticed it at all, actually.
Yeah, outsiders are often surprised at that.
It didn't cause much noise or pollution, or it didn't seem so to us in 1980.
Right. Well, it happened after the scrubbers or something was put on the smokestacks, and it wasn't a problem beforehand. Doral Chenoweth, do you remember?
Oh, yeah, I remember it well. And actually, my question for Jennifer is, hi, Jennifer, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
Nice to talk to you again. I've got some photographs spread out in front of me here in the WOSU studio, and there's a photo of you in the village hall. You were the town clerk, if I remember right, which was like a part-time job for you.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So what were those meetings like? There were private meetings with residents only, so the media wasn't allowed in. And what were they like for you all? Were they heated, or were you all resigned to this and just trying to get the best deal possible? What was the inside? What was it like on the inside?
Well, it's really kind of hard for me to remember, but at first we met, I think, and discussed the problems that each of us were having as the plant, I guess, grew larger into closer to our territory. But probably with the different types of fallout and pollution and things like that, and then we had to come up with a plan as to what we would do, and then the lawyers became a part of it, and then they individually dealt with the residents, because after we brought the attorneys on board, it was more or less an individual choice whether you decided to accept the offer, whether you decided that you would move and sell your property, or they had a special deal, I guess you could say, for people that were older or disabled, I think, that they could sell their property but stay there until nursing home placement or death, I believe, if I recall right.
And for your listeners, what I remember about the deal was there was a pool of money, about $20 million that AEP set forward. And then the residents who decided to be a part of it were able to divide that up. And the way it worked out, you got about 2.5 times your appraised value of your property. Is that right, Jennifer?
Well, we aren't really supposed to discuss the deal, but I will say that it was just a little more than that.
Okay, so I'm on the right track. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there's a good pot of money. So if you had a home that was maybe valued at $50,000, you know, suddenly you're looking at, what, $150,000 mm-hmm. offer on the table?
Probably someplace around that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So
you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. You're listening to Doral Chenoweth. He's a videographer and web producer at the Columbus Dispatch. Now, he was just a photographer. Back in 2002 when AEP announced it was buying out the Ohio River Village of Cheshire, which had been there for, you know, over a century and was coexisting since the mid-70s with the Gavin Coal burning power plant that AEP built there. And in about 2001, they put in certain kind of scrubbers, some pollution control devices because of the coal burning, and exacerbated a problem, actually created a problem in the process that caused lots of discomfort, stinging eyes, throats. People with certain medical conditions were especially endangered. So also with us, Eve Morgenstern, director and producer of Cheshire, Ohio, An American Coal Story in 3X. And on the phone, Jennifer Harrison, former Cheshire resident. Okay, so I'm going to bring in Barry now from Delaware, Ohio. You grew up in Cheshire. Barry, welcome to the show.
Hi there.
So did you move with the buyout?
No, I was going, I moved in 1989.
Okay.
I moved out there in 89. I just grew up in that town. I'm from 1970.
And, all right, so your family moved. Nobody was there at the buyout?
No, I mean, I just lived right up the road when the buyout took place.
Okay. Yeah. So what were your experiences? Eve Morgenstern mentioned earlier that the village residents, you know, at least had a buyout offer, but people around the area still had to live there with the blue plumes, right?
Yes. Yeah, it's like I did not live in the village, but if you go 1 mile back behind the plant, I lived right there. So, I mean, I think anything that they was exposed to, we would have been exposed to. I think in 19, I mean, I might not be correct about this, but maybe in 2001 or 2002 is when they really started tracking the dioxin, the sulfur dioxin. But, I mean, that cloud was always there. The poor people that live in West Virginia across the state, those would be the people I would worry about. That's where the wind blows daily. If you ever watch them plumes, them clouds, it blows across the Ohio River into West Virginia.
And Eve Morgenstern, you deal with that in the documentary.
Yeah, I think people in the film discuss that, the lawyers that I speak to and some residents like this gentleman. You know, people are aware. They see the smoke. It's blowing all over the place. This idea that, you know, you would draw a line as to how far that air would travel in terms of affecting people negatively. You can't do that. And I think even buying the town just sort of heightened probably some anxiety for people living on the outskirts and wondered, well, what does this leave us and what does all this mean?
And I'm trying to remember how AEP justified that. Jennifer Harrison, can you refresh our memories?
Well, I don't think they did justify it. I think that the village residents became such a problem to them that they offered us money probably to shut us up better than anything, and they never did justify it. And, yes, the pollution went well beyond the corporation limit.
But there was a lawsuit in 2006, I believe. What happened there?
This is Citizens Against Pollution. So that's the second act of the film. And I, you know, that's very interesting. These are people that live on the outskirts, but very close. They also were very attached to Cheshire. They saw that as their village, too.
Right.
You know, they would drive into it and and were friends with people there. And their lawsuit was very different. Theirs was really theirs was about making the plant compliant in keeping emissions at healthier levels, which, you know, that's a tough thing to keep them to. But they were successful in that case. The plant had to reduce their emissions, and they had to report more frequently, like directly to the residents. So it was, you know, I guess a small victory. Maybe it was considered a large victory. But the problem with that case is that, you know, years go by and you talk to residents down there and there are just still problems. I just think with a big power plant like that, and this is what we learn from stories like this, there's going to be pollution. There's going to be problems. There's going to be hazards. There's potentially going to be accidents. I mean, this is what happens. You know, it's a tough story. And I understand why the Cheshire residents sold out and left. And, you know, I feel for people who live nearby now and who are negotiating with the plant and issues of coal ash now. And is it going to get into the water and into the ground?
And now it's being sold, too.
And now it's being sold to some private firm, and everyone's wondering, well, what does that mean?
We're going to talk about that later on in the program. Jennifer Harrison, where did you go? What did you do? What do you know about what others did?
We moved about 10 to 15 minutes down the road, and as far as being under the plume, we no longer were, and bought 70-plus acres kind of out in the country. And but every time we would drive through there, you know, it still was somewhat painful to see, but there you could still tell there was a problem. However, we didn't have to deal with it on a day-to-day firsthand basis. And so 15 minutes down the road, I know that everyone says, well, you know, you're still affected by pollution that close by. Well, we probably are, but not to the point that we were when we lived in town, and stress was much less, and you know, we still continue to enjoy our new home and property, I guess. Mm-hmm. Not so new anymore, but yeah, just about 10 or 15 minutes down the road.
Have there been reunions?
No. Sadly, maybe two or three people get together. We always meant to. We never have. Several people have passed away now. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, still run into each other from time to time or still talk to each other, but no, not a reunion, so to speak of.
So, Eve Morgenstern, tell us what's there now, what you see and what people will see when they see the documentary.
Well, what you see now is, you know, a lot of empty fields. And it's hard to imagine that there was a whole village there. And there are some eerie little clues that there was a village there. You'll see, you know, parts of sidewalks.
Yeah.
Signs for the streets are still there.
And it's like the volcano villages in Hawaii where the lava's taken over and there's signs sticking out. That's interesting.
Yeah. And it looks a lot smaller, you know, for people that were there when the whole village was there. Now that all the homes are gone, it's very disorienting if you were there when the village was there and then to see it now.
At the beginning of the film, you have the maintenance guy who's been paid, I don't know, you know, how much a year to stay and take care of the property. He mows the lawn, mows the grass, and how he describes is just turning around going, well, those people live there and they live there and he knows her name still.
Yeah, I mean, it's you do still see that a lot in America. It's like you know, there's this strong attachment to place and to towns in certain parts of the country where people stay their whole lives and, you know, generations. And that Cheshire was that kind of a town. So still, you know, when I filmed that scene, I mean, there's still this sadness, you know, it's like all these years later and he remembers exactly where everybody lived. I remember Jennifer came back with me to show us where they lived and her husband didn't even, you know, want to get out of the car because it was so upsetting. And this is over a decade later.
Right.
So, you know, it's raw still. But also what you'll find when you go down there is that there are still people living
right. All
around where the village was. And they are very concerned. You know, there's this enormous coal ash mountain. Before I called it a field, it's actually a mountain. It's gotten the green light to expand by the EPA. And if you know anything about coal ash, that's really concerning. It blows around. It can get into the water and get into the ground. These workers feel that they're sick from working on it without proper protection. So it is, you know, really emblematic of the constant danger that we're dealing with these huge coal-fired power plants. And where are we going, you know, with this and how it affects climate change? It affects all of us. So it's, you know, I was really drawn to the story because it's very intimate, little town. You could tell this intimate story of just this one place. But I think it expands out into much bigger issues. We're all affected by these coal-fired power plants.
And we should note that the village of Cheshire does live on. Toward the end of the buyout phase, they had a vote in the village. And what actually happened was the village lives on as an entity, and they expanded the village to include people. I believe it would be on the eastern side. There's a whole road. Of
so they annexed more property.
They annexed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. And they annexed them in.
And that's so that they could keep a police presence and the streetlights going.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So the village does live on in a way, but the core of the village is gone. But there's another sort of more rural area of the village that's further out. Right, Jennifer?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. We had a vote to dissolve the corporation, but the residents at first were all for that. But then when they started to think about those that would be left behind in the unincorporated areas, plus some that still would remain, if the village was dissolved, there would be no streetlights. There would be no police department, no village officials to take care of those things. And so I think in the end, it was decided by vote that the village corporation would not be dissolved. So the people that remained would still benefit from things that most villages have, probably that you take for granted, like the streetlights and the police department.
Right. Was that contentious?
I would say, yes. I don't know.
I remember some signs, and the sentiment in the town was that for those who were staying, they said, just leave us the village and let us deal with it. And, you know, you all take your property, sell it to AEP, but just let us deal with what remains and don't dissolve our government entity quite yet.
Right.
Let us do that.
Right.
And it worked.
Right.
That campaign worked. It was like, just leave the lights on for us, mm-hmm. you know.
Well, another thing, the village, you know, they received tax money from the county and the state, and if it was dissolved, they wouldn't receive any tax money for a village. And in the end, I think everybody felt that it was probably for the best that we did just take our and leave the village and the corporation intact for those that remained.
Jennifer Harrison, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Jennifer Harrison is a former Cheshire resident, one of the residents that took the buyout from AEP back in 2002. Also with us, Eve Morgenstern, director and producer of a documentary about the buyout of Cheshire and what has remained and what remains as issues. Cheshire, Ohio, an American Coal Story in 3X. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
There will be a screening of the documentary this week at the Gateway Film Center in Columbus. For more information on that, check out the link at our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Eve Morgenstern will be there for a Q&A with the audience, moderated by Andy Chow of the Ohio Public Media Statehouse News Bureau. Also, Doral Chenoweth, thanks for joining us. I appreciate your time today.
No, thank you.
Doral Chenoweth is a videographer and web producer at the Columbus Dispatch back in 2002 when the Dispatch sent a team down there to embed in Cheshire. Doral Chenoweth was among that team. We are going to talk now about that future of coal down along the Ohio River and beyond when we come back. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We've been talking about a little bit of coal energy history dating to 2002 when American Electric Power spent $20 million to buy out the village of Cheshire along the Ohio River and adjacent to its General James M. Gavin Power Plant. Pollution control devices had ironically caused a new style of blue sulfuric emission that sometimes would envelop the village in smog that burned the eyes and throats of residents. Last month, AEP wrote another chapter in the power plant's life when the utility announced that the coal-fired power plant had displaced 221 souls 14 years ago would be sold. We wanted to wrap up the show with a look at the current state of coal and what the AEP sale of the Gavin and three other power plants means. Joining us is Columbus Dispatch Energy reporter Dan Guarino. Welcome back.
Good to be back, Ann.
The sale that includes the Gavin plant, it's a $2.17 billion deal. It involves two other Ohio plants and another one in Indiana. What does this portend? What do we know about that?
It has to do with the structure that Ohio has set up for power plants. Ohio decided in the late 1990s that it wanted power plants to compete on an open market. And through fits and starts, they've made that transition to where even though some power plants were owned by AEP and AEP also delivered your electricity, the state required that you split those two parts of the business so that the power that was generated at plants like Gavin would be sold at whatever the market price was. And what happened is all of these utilities, the utilities that used to own power plants, have found that that's a really tough market, and it's a really tough market lately because the price of electricity has been really low.
They wanted it, though. They were heavy into the negotiations back in the 90s over deregulation.
The major utilities had serious misgivings about this, and the dynamic at the time was at that time, FirstEnergy had the highest rates in the state. Incredibly high rates,
right?
Because of nuclear power plants. Two nuclear power plants that cost a lot more than the company had anticipated when they were built, and AEP had really low rates. And with deregulation, it was both FirstEnergy and AEP had misgivings about it, but the effect has been that FirstEnergy's rates have kind of come down and AEP rates have gone up, and we're kind of settling into this middle in which Ohio no longer has among the lowest electricity prices in the country, or in particular the area served by AEP, because that's where some of the lowest rates were.
You wrote that – all right, so it's the deregulation that makes Ohio so difficult. Other states didn't do that?
Several other states did do it. And it's really a different story in each state. What's happened in Ohio is it isn't that Ohio is intrinsically difficult. What's happening is this is just a bad market for people who own old power plants. Mm. The price of electricity has gone way down. And one of the reasons for that, there are a number, but one of the reasons for that is that natural gas is so expensive. We realize that we're sitting on all of this natural gas.
Natural gas is so
inexpensive.
Inexpensive. Right, gotcha.
So when a plant like Gavin, takes hundreds of people to operate. A natural gas plant, a couple natural gas plants that could provide the equivalent energy, it costs a lot less to operate. It's cleaner to operate. Environmentalists will have qualms with both coal and natural gas, but a lot less so with natural gas. But what's happening is it's just there's this kind of cost competition in which coal plants are losing, and companies that have a lot invested in coal plants are suffering because of it.
This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm talking with the Columbus Dispatch reporter Dan Guarino about the future of coal in Ohio by way of a new documentary about Cheshire, Ohio, which was bought out by AEP back in 2002. Now AEP has announced that it is selling that plant along with three others in a $2.17 billion deal. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. So the other three plants run on natural gas. The other three plants in this deal run on natural gas. Why sell the other three? Was it just to get rid of Gavin?
I wasn't in the room
privy
with the negotiations.
And by the way, we have invited AEP. They declined our invitation.
What I suspect is that this was in order to sell, there was a mix of desirable assets and less desirable assets. In the current economy, who knows what, how desirable this batch of assets will look in 10 years or 5 years. But essentially AEP wanted to sell these plants that are no longer subject to state set rates. And these were the plants. These are those plants. Even though the natural gas plants are more profitable than the coal plant.
Two private equity firms are to buy the four plants, contingent on approval from regulators. What is that approval imminent? Is that expected? Could there be any catches there?
I would be surprised if there wasn't an approval. There have been. And I don't know if you call it a precedent, but the Duke Energy, which is based in North Carolina, but they are the local utility in the Cincinnati area, they sold all of their unregulated plants in the Midwest in a gigantic deal with Dynegy, which is an unregulated electricity provider. And that would be the closest thing that we've seen in Ohio to something like this, where you see multiple large plants changing hands. And it's anything involving energy regulators is complicated. But I would be surprised if this doesn't go through.
So is the trend to get out from beneath the regulation? Or, I mean, Ohio's deregulated in a way. What's the advantage? I mean, AEP still has to produce energy to sell, to put on the grid, right?
Well, no, not necessarily. In Ohio, the way it works is AEP is a company that has power lines, that sends you bills,
that has the
infrastructure and manages that customer relationship. And when they get electricity to provide to you and me, they're buying it on an open market at whatever the market price is. And those electrons could be coming from a plant owned by AEP. Mm-hmm. A lot of times it's not a plant owned by AEP. It's and it's part of this multi-state market that goes all the way to the Atlantic. So it's because of that separation, and that's different from AEP, say, in West Virginia. And AEP covers 11 states. Mm-hmm. And most of AEP is traditionally regulated, which means they own the plants and they also own the delivery system.
What's expected will happen to the plants? This, what do we know about how these private equity firms deal with these kinds of purchases?
It's kind of what happens with the plants. It'll be interesting to see if the investment in coal looks like a better deal 5 years from now, 10 years from now than it is now. We're in this period where electricity prices have been low and where natural gas prices have been low, which makes low natural gas prices makes coal comparatively really expensive. I can't imagine those market fundamentals staying the same for, you know, it's kind of the way it has been for a while now. At the same time, though, you will see forecasts that call for natural gas prices to not move much in the next few years. But it will – specifically with that coal plant, it'll be a question of how competitive is that plant. Now, keep in mind, the coal plant is just one of the plants they're buying. I mean, it could very well be that they've decided that those other three plants are going to be where – their future is.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't really said anything about what their plans are for these plants. Right now, though, that Gavin plant, as far as we can tell, is it's making money. It's just not making as much as its owners would like.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it employs hundreds of people.
I believe it employs 290 people.
Yeah.
And this is the thing. In that part of the state...
That's huge.
That's a huge employer. And when the sale happened... Talking to people in that part of the state, they're really rattled because AEP has another large power plant that's not that far from this one, and those two plants are a huge employer, and those are good jobs in that part of the state. If you talk to folks in Gallia County and you talk to, it's striking that you know they. They want AEP to stay. You know, they look back at when AEP had even more employees locally, and they think of those as the good old days. So it's an interesting dynamic.
Last March, the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio granted AEP and First Energy profit guarantees that critics said would raise electricity rates. What happened there?
So the Public Utilities Commission approved these plans that cover selected plants. Basically, AEP and First Energy took what are most likely their least profitable plants. Now, that plan did not include Gavin. So it included a couple plants other than Gavin. The Public Utilities Commission said you can have this added income. And almost immediately afterwards, the federal energy regulators said, no, this is a violation of their actual ruling was would take me an hour and a half to attempt to explain.
Please don't.
But basically what they were saying is you can't do that.
Yeah.
So now we're in this phase where First Energy is trying to get some money through a different mechanism. And AEP has significantly retrenched in kind of what it's looking for. The bottom line is that as far as the Gavin plant wasn't part of that plan, so it's not affected. And that's one of the reasons why this sale took place. AEP took what I suspect are its least profitable plants and said, we would like to keep these plants open, but they're not as economically competitive as we'd like. If you want these to be open, give us this deal. While at the same time, they were looking at a sale for the plants that could probably get a decent sale price in the market. Mm-hmm. And that's so you kind of have this two-track process going on. And the outcome could very well be that AEP sells all of its plants in the state, and then it becomes just a company that its corporate headquarters is here, mm-hmm. But is just a company that sends you bills and manages your power lines.
Hmm. Well, Dan Guarino, I want to thank you for joining us today. It's all clear as can be. Thanks to you. I appreciate it. That's Dan Guarino. He's an energy reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. Thanks again.
Good to be here.
You know, we've been talking about the future of coal and energy in the state of Ohio by way of the story about Cheshire, Ohio. It was bought out in 2002 by AEP. And there's a new documentary. It'll be screened this week. If you want to learn more information about that, it's entitled Cheshire, Ohio, An American Coal Story in Three Acts. We have a link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. If you want to check that out, there's a screening. There's a Q&A with the director producer of the film as well. Thanks for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.